Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Welcome, Negotiations Ninja listeners, to this incredible throwback edition of the show where we talk to Mr. Josh King on the negotiation methods that beginners have to, they must, they are required to learn to be successful in negotiation and approaching negotiation from the value of creating total value. We get into that discussion today in this amazing throwback edition. Enjoy. Hey, listeners, thanks for joining the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Today we have Mr. Josh King on the show. He's the CPO at American Water, and he shares with us his wisdom, his knowledge, his skills when it comes to getting better at negotiation, getting better at procurement. A lot of young procurement, young negotiation professionals, if you're listening to this, you're going to get a lot out of this because this guy's been there and he's done that. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Take some notes. Looking forward to your feedback. Josh, how are you?
Hey, Mark. How are you? I'm great today.
Awesome. I'm good, man. I'm stoked to have you on. Thank you so much for being here.
No, thanks for the invite. I appreciate you reaching out and I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, man. I think we're going to have a lot of fun today. A lot of people don't know you, though, so maybe you could fill the listeners in as to who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I'm Vice President and Chief Procurement Officer for American Water Company. American Water Company is the largest water utility in the country. We are in 16 states. We have roughly about 17 million or so folks that we serve water to every single day. And when I talk about water, I'm talking about from like source, a river to treatment plant, through pipes out to your tap and, you know, into your mouth from your tap. That's my role. That's what I do.
Incredible, man. You know, one of the things that I found super interesting, I put a word out on LinkedIn that said, hey, who should I have on as a guest on my podcast? And like three different people said, oh my God, you've got to have Josh King on your show to talk about what he's doing when it comes to negotiation. It's amazing how many people reached out to me privately and publicly to say, hey, you got to have this guy on. What's going on? What makes you so different?
First of all, it's humbling. Appreciate that. At heart, I'll just say I'm kind of a supply chain nerd. It's interesting how I stumbled on supply chain at one point in time, and I'll call it stumbling. After college, I served in the Navy for about 7 years as a submarine officer. My last 2 years, I finished my MBA at Villanova University, and I took a supply chain class while I was there, and I loved it. And so I ended up getting into consulting and focused on supply chain for utilities, got into category management, absolutely loved it, and then left consulting and started moving into the utility business. And, you know, from there, if you take a look at supply chain over like the last 3 or 4 years, it's changed so much. Supply chain at one point in time used to be a business that was, you worked in HR, or, oh, hey, you were an engineer. We want to put you in supply chain. I mean, now folks have degrees. Now folks can get masters in supply chains. I mean, it's really become a career in and of itself. I try to be as progressive as I possibly can be in this area. I'm a believer in continuous learning. I'm a believer when new technology comes out, adopt it, learn it. You need to keep up with the times. Even if you look at negotiations and the way we negotiate in supply chain, negotiations have changed so much over time. I think the style used to be, you know, slam your hand down on the table and say, lower your price. Why? Well, because I'm a big company, lower your price. To now where there's a lot of fact, there's a lot of science in negotiations. People are much more focused on the relationships now in negotiations. People recognize that suppliers have to be successful to properly serve you. So I think it's just a more progressive approach to negotiations and supply chain in general.
Yeah, I love that. And so when you talk about being more progressive and being more focused on sort of understanding what the new trends are when it comes to negotiation and procurement, I think one of the things that a lot of people have gotten better at is finding ways to plan better for negotiations. And so to that end, what do you think are the most important things you can do when you're planning for a negotiation?
I think a couple of things. There's obviously a lot of, I'll say, science and art to negotiations. And I guess I'll start with the science perspective of it. Now, and to be honest with you, I frankly think the art perspective might be a little more important, but I'll start with the science perspective of it. Now there's so much more public information that is out there around what you're buying versus in the past, right? And so part of this is just understanding what you're buying, what the market is, what the cost makeup of it is, what have you paid in the past, what should you be paying now, what should you be paying in the future, and putting together the facts that back up what you're trying to negotiate for. And so I'm a big fan of pulling together cost models, pulling together that market data, and preparing in that way to really educate yourself on the category from a science perspective. And then if I were to break it into an art perspective, the art perspective is just knowing who you're going to be meeting with, who you're going to negotiate with, and understanding the outcome, right? So what's your outcome and what's their outcome? What motivates them? When I'm talking to a salesperson, I'm going to adjust my style a bit more than when I'm talking with the general manager of that facility or someone else, right? Sales folks, and again, this isn't a knock on sales folks, but what's going to motivate sales folks is the paycheck. What drives the paycheck is the commission. And so you have to think about what their outcome is from that perspective versus if you're talking about something maybe with the president of the business or the GM of the business, they might be focused more on the longer term relationship, right? Where maybe I get this sale here, or maybe I can nail this down here, but playing the long game in a few more years, we build this relationship over time, and that's more important than this sale here and now. That's kind of my thoughts.
Love it. You know, there's been a lot of talk lately, and I know this is like a consistent topic that keeps coming up over and over and over again in procurement. But one thing that I saw lately, a post online, is should we be tying procurement's compensation more to the results that are generated from negotiations?
I will personally tell you, I am not a huge fan of that. Strictly because I'm a big believer in that you get what you incentivize, right? There's got to be balance in everything that you do. And so I think oftentimes when procurement professionals are encouraged to simply just drive to lowest cost, one of the things that the business will feedback on in the long run is, oh, supply chain, you're just going for the cheapest widget or the cheapest part instead of approaching things from a total value perspective. Total value takes into account the overall life cycle of the item, the overall relationship that you could have with the supplier. There's a ton of value-added services that suppliers will oftentimes throw into the mix that really don't cost you anything, but you ask for it and they give it to you. I mean, how do you quantify that? How do you value that beyond savings? When we deliver our scorecard to executive management, we deliver a couple of different things. One thing that we deliver is the actual metrics, right, themselves. How much did we save? How much avoided cost? How much hard cost? But the other thing that we always deliver too is kind of a soft value type of piece. And honestly, the thing that I've gotten feedback on from executive management is they value the soft value feedback more than the actual hard cost metrics. They want to know the story about what we achieved and how we achieved it. That means typically a lot more.
Yeah. And I would totally agree with you. I think those soft things are definitely hard to quantify. And that's where a lot of the value is created. And so what I've seen is that procurement's role is becoming significantly more recently, in the last 5 years, even more of a role of internal management consultant and teaching people how to do things and how to facilitate business more than anything else, as opposed to how we were previously viewed, which is really just transactional.
Yeah, so I'm with you there. And I'll actually give you a very good example. We recently just implemented a new procurement system. And we actually just implemented Coupa, and we're one of the first utilities in the United States to implement Coupa. And before Coupa, we were using SAP SRM, which is no longer going to be supported after about the 2021 timeframe. But one of the things that was happening on like the requisition side was a requisition would be generated by the business, and it would go directly to a more senior person in the business, and then would kind of go out the door. And so supply chain never saw it. We had never visibility into it. We never saw what happened. And so one of the things that we implemented with Coupa was I said, I need a process change. I need the requisitions to go down two paths. So one requisition needs to go down the automation path where it meets a bunch of decision points. It goes out the door. Nobody touches it. That's it. The second one is where if there's an exception in the process, it kicks out. And what we have found, and by the way, a lot of resistance to that initially. It was, oh, you're going to slow me down. You're going to cause me issues. But as things started kicking out of the process, we started understanding the risk of what folks were buying without the protections necessary to buy it. And what that did was it created a dialogue with folks around the value that we can add and why we have the things that we do. And so actually, it strengthened the relationship with the business. It demonstrated that the value that we can add, it demonstrated we knew what we were talking about. And now on the back end of things, we've become much more of this business consultant, trusted advisor. So they're getting us a lot more involved earlier and upfront with our needs, which is really just generating a lot of additional value to the company. And so it's much more of an educational process, and shifting to that new process and that new system has really helped us get there.
Fantastic. You know, negotiation, when we talk about it, it's so much more than just sunshine and rainbows. I feel like sometimes we get into discussions where things have gone bad in negotiations. And I know that we don't like to talk about it, but it's where we get a lot of our learnings from, right? We learn very little from our successes, but we learn a lot from our failures. There must be something that you've done in your career at some point in time that you're not too happy about, and the results maybe of the negotiation, or maybe even just the process. Would you be willing to share with the listeners a negotiation that you've had that maybe didn't go so well?
I'll definitely share one. I think it's got a common theme, frankly, over the course of at least my history. And, you know, I'm a kinder, gentler Josh King than I probably was, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, where I had a bit of a temper. And, you know, one thing that I can tell you that I see with negotiations and personal experiences is that you got to keep emotions out of it. When you begin to take things personally and you begin to let emotions play, things are going to go south very quickly. And you need to be able to take the high road there. And I have a lot of personal pride. I have a lot of professional pride. I take my role, my job very seriously. So therefore, I get sometimes emotional about it. And by the way, I think the toughest negotiations are settlements. It's actually not negotiating for something up front, but when something goes wrong on the back end, trying to negotiate the settlement for what exactly happened. And that's exactly what happened, was that I was negotiating with CFO of a company. He came in, and it was actually immediately a very in-your-face, aggressive kind of position that he took. You know, I remember my colleague in the room, who was another senior business leader from our business, just kind of looked at me, and we were both flabbergasted, and we tried to interject, and we tried to calm things down, and it just made him more agitated, and then he got more agitated, I got more agitated, and we actually had to call a break at one point. And, you know, we stepped out, and I said, I have to take the high road here, right? I'm not going to let this guy get under my skin at all, and I got to show him that we're going to be calm here. And so that to me is probably one of the most important things to consider in negotiations. And it's easy sometimes to get a little out of control.
Totally. And I think if we can't manage our emotions, it becomes incredibly difficult to maintain any sort of credibility as well within that negotiation, because I think it ruins a lot of credibility. This happens all the time. Obviously, emotions are part of negotiations, and we just need to learn how to manage them better. But that's easy for you and I to say, because you've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing this for a long time. What about some of the younger procurement professionals that might be listening to this right now, or negotiation professionals that might be listening to this? How do we help them to realize where they may be getting emotional, where they can start to manage it? What do we do? Are there steps that you took?
I always urge people to be self-critical. And part of being self-critical is that self-awareness. Am I getting upset? Do I intend to get upset, right? There's times in my career where I walked in and said, I'm going to get ticked about this situation, and I'm going to get ticked because I want them to know I'm mad. And I plan for that, right? There's other times where it spontaneously happens. And what you've got to watch out for is your intent and be self-aware of your intent. And if you find yourself getting upset, don't feel it's awkward to just look up and go, hey, you know what? I need a minute. I need to step out of the room, grab some water, grab some coffee, you know, hit the facility, calm down. If you feel like you're upset, go talk to someone, talk about the situation, get some advice, or just sometimes take a pause and go, hey, you know what? My head's not in the game right now. I think it's best if we continue this at another point in time, right? Versus just continuing to escalate the situation. That would be my advice.
Yeah, fantastic advice. I think a lot of self-awareness is required whenever we get into these kinds of situations, understanding who you are and what triggers you so that you can think about that beforehand to make sure that you're basically prepping yourself for what might happen so that you don't get caught up in that sort of like, it almost becomes like an emotional arms race, right? Like they get angry, you get angry, they get angry because you're getting angry. And so now you're getting angry at each other just because you're getting angry. And so it becomes like this weird arms race to the top of who can get the most frustrated. So I think, you know, if we manage that, that makes things a lot more easy.
Yeah, well said. Look, I think that's a life lesson with anything that you do outside of negotiations. If you're going to get upset, you should get upset with intent,
yes,
right? There's other times where I go in and I go, I am just going to just charm these people to death, right? Like my intent is I am just going to go in and I am just going to kiss up and I am going to charm them to death because that's going to be my strategy in this type of situation as well, right? So you just got to stick to the plan.
Yeah, totally agree with you. As you were coming up, was there a role model that you modeled yourself after, or was there someone that you looked up to that you thought that's the kind of person that I want to be?
It's an interesting question because I think over the course of your career, you work with and you see a lot of different kinds of people and styles out there. And there's styles where I've looked at them and I've said, absolutely not. I'm not doing that. And there's other styles I've seen where I'm like, wow, I really respect the heck out of that person. I think probably the styles that I respect the most are more of the calmer, cooler, collected kinds of styles. A couple of examples of folks. So my chief procurement officer at my last company and someone I owe a lot of my career to, her name's Barb Gomez, and she retired a couple of years ago. And one of the smartest, most intelligent people I ever met in my life. And Barb was so calm, so cool and so collected, but she was tough as nails. I mean, Barb was just, she was a tough lady, but you would have never thought she was tough just talking to her. She was smart as a whip. She thought about every angle, about every strategy. She was meticulous. She was a tough worker. She balanced her work and her life, and she was just an incredible negotiator. She could negotiate anything, but she did it by just keeping this calm, cool kind of style to her. And I'll say another one is, you know, a coworker of mine right now who I've known a long time. His name's Mike Rich, and he's one of my direct reports. He's actually my director of national categories and corporate procurement. And Mike's an Iraqi war veteran. And Mike's another one that if you ever talk to him, he just exudes confidence. He's just calm, cool, and collected. And he just manages to keep his emotions in check. And that provides him a lot of leverage whenever he's negotiating or talking with someone. He's just one that when you talk to him, it's an instant connection and just this instant trust that you get with him just through those discussions.
I love that you gave both of those people a shout out. Just for those people that are listening, you may want to check those people out on LinkedIn, because if Josh thinks that they're pretty wicked, chances are they're pretty wicked. So you should check them out. Josh, as we close off, one thing that I ask all my interviewees whenever we get into a situation where we're having a discussion about negotiation is, what is the one piece of advice that you want to leave the listeners with about how to improve their negotiation skills?
So I think it starts with planning and intent. I'm an outcomes-based person. I think if you always start with the end in mind and you work backwards and you focus on outcomes, you're going to drive to outcomes. That's going to help you plan. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing is facts. Go in and have your facts straight and have your facts verified. And even if you don't necessarily have, I'll say, the facts, put together a proposal, put together a plan. we think about something like a cost model. Throw together a cost model. Do it based on facts you pull together. Share it with someone. Share it with the supplier. Have them have a discussion with you about it. Take that as an opportunity to build your intelligence as you're going through these negotiations. And then the third thing I would say is, again, that emotional piece. It's that emotional intelligence piece to it, is understand who's on the other side of the table and understand their personality and what they're going to come in with, and make sure you adjust your style accordingly based on who they are, and make sure you're self-aware of how you're coming off in those emotions to it.
Such amazing tips, man. How do people follow you online?
I'll tell you, I'm not a huge social media junkie, but I am on LinkedIn. So you can absolutely find me on LinkedIn if you search me under American Water. You know, I connect with anybody as long as, and this is just my personal rule on LinkedIn. You'll probably laugh when you see it on my profile. LinkedIn to me is not a business development tool. So don't link in with me to sell me something. Link in with me to network and let's grow professionally together, right? If you want to sell me something, my work email address is on there, and shoot an email to me.
Yeah, love it, dude. Awesome. Well, listen, man, a great pleasure having you on. I certainly appreciate the wisdom that you've shared with the listeners. Excellent tips, excellent shout outs to your mentors. Thank you very much for being on.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity, and I look forward to other folks that you have on the podcast too.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get, because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.